Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Bet $50 at WynnBET and get $200 in free bets. Bet big and win bigger with WynnBET. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. And also make sure to download the SGPN app. It's your home for all of our free picks and podcasts. Download the SGPN app wherever it is you download apps.
Howdy ho, DeGenerinos, and welcome to another brand new edition of the MMA Gambling Podcast and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 140. Obviously, depending on when you listen to this, but if you listen to this when it's fresh off on the MMA Gambling Podcast feed, which you all should be subscribed to, it'll be still Mother's Day. So this one obviously goes out to all the mothers out there. I'm sure we have tons of mothers that aren't related to us that listen to this podcast. So this goes out to all the mothers. And after the results of the UFC last night, if you followed my co-host's gambling advice, and you probably consider us a mother also, the starting of a word that starts with mother. I won't say the rest of it, but yes. Hello. I didn't get a laugh for that, which is sad. I was hoping to get a chuckle out of my co-host, but nothing. My joke fell flat. Who would I be cracking the horrible jokes? I would be your host, the Jordanian Lion, Jeff Fox. Thank you for coming to the show and listening to us. If it's your first time here, which it's a strange episode to jump in on, a recap episode, but hey, we're happy you're here regardless. If you're wondering what exactly the show is, we cover the wacky world of mixed martial arts. And it was very, very wacky this weekend. Plenty of chaos and wackiness, which we will dive into right away. Depending on the spin on it, we either gave you really good picks or we gave you really bad picks. So we did you good, and we also did you dirty. So let's bring in the positive spin man, the man who always has a positive spin on results, whether they're good or bad. The one and only Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hello.
So I didn't laugh at your joke for two reasons. Number one, all of our recommended plays were fire yet again. See, you know, I was,
here we go.
I was, if I'm not mistaken, 2-2, but just barely broke even. Which breaking even, that's a good thing. And I hit a massive underdog to make it break even, which is even cooler. And yours, three for four, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's true. Recommended plays are the way to go, everyone.
Absolutely. So yeah, it turns out you shouldn't just bet on every single fight. But also, I will say the other reason I didn't laugh at your joke is you constantly tell me I'm not allowed to talk until you tell me to.
That's true. You are allowed to snicker. I thought because I was referring to a bad word, and you don't like bad words, Dan.
That's right. I'm notoriously clean mouthed.
It's true. So wacky. I think I summed up the weekend.
Correctly, yeah, right? I mean, fucking ridiculous is the right way. Yeah.
There's the bad words. Mostly UFC, but I heard there was some wackiness in like Bellator. There was some horrible decision, and you know, Bellator is going to Bellator, but yeah, there was wackiness all around. But mostly it was reserved to the big show of the UFC. I was going to say it didn't cost us any money, but yeah, it did. Actually, the co-main event did cost us some money. So anyhow, like Dan said, he spun it. Everything is positive. We ended up making you money. If you have to decipher our picks and listen to the parts that you actually should gamble on and the ones where we're just, you know, throwing picks out there, obviously. So before we get into recap, any news that we should crack into other than stuff related to last night, Daniel?
I don't know if there's any super big news. I mean, like, the UFC just decided to drop an absolute bombshell of a UFC, I guess it's International Fight Week card. I'm guessing it's 4th of July weekend. Yeah. They just dropped an absolute bombshell. It's not the entire card, But, like, I honestly can't decipher where five main cards begin and end, because, like, all of them could be fights that you would see on a pay-per-view main card. Like, the worst fight, I think, of all of them is, like, either Jessica Ai and Macy Barber or Robbie Lawler and Brian Barberena. And, like, you would never bat an eyelash if either of those were the fifth fight on a pay-per-view, right? So, like, the in there's...
Well, not Macy Barber, no.
Yeah, of course, you love Macy Barber. One, two, three, four... Five, six, seven. There are nine fights that they announced, and those are the worst two. So, like, I guess that's the major news, is like that July 2nd card is insane.
Yeah. So it's July 2nd, T-Mobile Arena, Paradise, Nevada. Be there, be square. UFC 276. I'll give you a quick rundown of the key fights. Main event will be middleweight championship Israel Adesanya versus Jared Cannonier. And then co-main event, UFC featherweight championship, Alexander Volkanovski versus Max Holloway. No real surprises with either of those announcements. That was pretty much where everyone expected the title chase to go, the challengers being Cannonier and Holloway.
Yeah, no, those are exactly what I thought. When Cannonier won against Brunson, and in the way he won against Brunson, like, you have to book that. And Holloway was already booked for this fight. So, yeah, they're... Both fights I thought were going to happen, and I'm fine with them happening too. You know, I don't love the 2-0 trilogy. You know, I'd rather, yeah. You know, but like, it's not like Max Holloway hasn't earned his way back up, right? He beat the shit out of Calvin Kattar. Like, yeah, he's earned his chance. So, yeah, like fights I expected to see, and fights I'm probably going to be excited to watch when they do come around too.
Yeah, as we've said before, Holloway is pretty much clearly the second best guy in featherweight. So, hey, if they want to roll that back, by all means. I don't expect the outcome to be any different, but hey, he is the most deserving. So we got those. We got Sean Strickland versus Alex Pereira, which we mentioned, I think, last podcast. Sean O'Malley versus Pedro Munhoz. So Sean O'Malley finally gets a bit of a step up there. Uriah Hall versus Andre Muniz. Brad Tavares versus Dricus du Plessis. Jessica Rose Clark versus Julia Stolyarenko, a little bit of a step up for Stolyarenko, maybe, if Clark has anything left in the tank here. Lauren Murphy, one of Dan's favorites, versus Miesha Tate. So she gets a big name opponent there. Jessica Ai versus Macy Barber, Dan's favorite. And then Robbie Lawler versus Brian Barberena. So yeah, very, very stacked fight card. And that's only, what, nine fights of this? So we probably got another five or six more going to be added before all is said and done.
Yeah, I think you mentioned 10 fights. The Stolyarenko one, Jesse Rose Clark one, was news to me, because the nine I was thinking of were all announced on the broadcast, and that one wasn't. So that one, ink just must not be dry yet on that one, or it wasn't announcement worthy. But, like, you know, that's also a banger. I mean, like, a little bit less known in terms of Stolyarenko hasn't had the best run in the UFC, but she's a lot of fun to watch.
Yep. So, on the flip side, this means we're going to have probably a lot of crappy cards leading up to this one in July, and crappy ones right after this one in July, because pretty much they're stacking everything on this pay-per-view, which is the way the UFC has been operating since they got their guaranteed money deal with ESPN. Load up the pay-per-views, and then for the fight night cards, maybe have one decent main event, maybe a semi-decent co-main, and then whatever else is available, they just slot it in there. Don't really care.
Well, I hear what you're saying here, but also, you know, if you follow Marcel Dorf on Twitter, who has like a nice spreadsheet where he lists every fight that he's been able to ascertain is solidified leading up to when they actually get announced. There is already a lot announced for June, which is, you know, obviously the weeks leading up to July 2nd. In June, we have Glover Teixeira, Jiří Procházka, Valentina Shevchenko, Talia Santos, Weili Zhang, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. That's on that pay-per-view that kicks off actually the second week of June. The one right after that's Kelvin Kattar, Josh Emmett. And we've also got Kevin Holland on that card, as well as, like, Jeremiah Wells and Gregory Rodriguez. And then we got Shavkat Rachmanov versus Neil Magny, which I guess is, like, maybe the shittiest of those, like, fight night cards that are going to be leading into July. Like, that's probably the headliner. But it's also got, like, Chris Curtis versus Rodolfo Vieira, and Tim Elliott's fighting on that card. Like, that's probably the worst, but even that is not as bad as, like, some of the recent ones we've had. So, yeah, they might be giving us a little bit lighter in terms of fights. And, one more thing. The week after that is Rafael Dos Anjos, Rafael Fiziev, which is a hell of a fight, too.
Battle of the Rafaels. Whoever loses cannot use the name Rafael. Did you know that's what's happening?
I did know that. Also, that one's co-main evented by Cody Garbrandt and Rani Yahya, which is, I just have to say, Rani Yahya co-main eventing a card in 2022 is everything my WEC loving heart really always wanted.
But you're telling me the cards aren't weak. So, okay.
No, they're good. That's good. He's on a hot streak.
Nerds like us, sure.
He's hot. Hani is on a hot streak. Isn't he like, hang on. I gotta put the intern on this one. Isn't Hani on a win streak? Am I wrong about this?
It's not a Hani Yahya podcast.
It should be.
It should be.
He's won. He has won. Get this. He's only lost once in his last seven fights.
Fantastic. And now he's going to knock out Cody Garbrandt.
Wouldn't that be amazing? He's probably going to heel hook him, but sure. Yeah.
Is Cody Garbrandt on your hate list?
It's hard to say. I've never been a big alpha male guy. No, it seems like now he's not even alpha male. I don't know. He looked really bad against TJ Dillashaw both those times.
You seeing he's a beta? Unarmed beta?
Is that what the reviewer called you that time?
We were unarmed betas. Lefty unarmed betas or something like that.
Yeah. I'm not a big Cody Garbrandt guy, but I wouldn't say he's on my hate list.
Okay, good. He was nice to that kid with cancer, so you can't totally.
Oh, right. Yeah.
All right, this isn't a Cody Garbrandt podcast either, and it shouldn't be.
Just the Hani Yahya one.
Yes, it's a Hani Yahya podcast. Oh, imagine the listeners we get if we made this only. All we do is talk about Hani Yahya twice a week for at least an hour.
And we go back to all his WEC fights and
review
talk about
every fight.
What the odds would have been when he fought.
Yep.
Did he fight Takeo Mizugaki? I feel like he probably fought Takeo Mizugaki.
Who didn't? Yes. Yep, we're going to review every fight. This is our spin-off. We're going to review every fight of his. We're going to go through blow by blow of every fight and what the live odds should be at the moment of he hit that takedown and whatnot. So, yeah, get ready for it, people.
I just looked it up. He did fight Takeo Mizugaki.
Of course he did. Mizugaki's like total WEC.
He fought him right after he fought Benavidez and right before he beat Mike Brown.
we're losing our WEC guys. There's not too many left now.
Just Hani waving the flag for us.
Cormier was talking about OSP being like one of the last of the Strikeforce people. Yeah, it's the same as WEC. So, hey, Misha Tate's right on the screen in front of me. So she is still Strikeforce. She's still around. So. And Robbie Lawler. Hey, there's a lot of Strikeforce people on that card coming up.
Clay Guida.
Clay Guida's too. Maybe they'll stick him on UFC 276 too. Who knows?
Guida's WEC and Strikeforce, which is a special blend right there.
It is. He is a special blend of herbs and spices. All right. Let's get down to brass tacks here. First, of course, WynnBET. We can't get started without telling about WynnBET. Make sure to get down on the Wins Bet $50 Win $200 promotion where a $50 bet qualifies you for up to $200 in free bets. Plus, the WynnBET Casino is offering 100% deposit bonus up to $1,000. And of course, don't forget to get involved in their same game parlays with the Wynn's own build your own bet feature. All users can receive a $20 free bet when they win, lose, or push a 3+ leg build your own bet parlay between Thursday and Saturday. Players can take advantage of the offer on the NBA playoffs. No spoilers. I have not watched the Suns game today. So any callers that call into our podcast, don't spoil me on the game. There's so much.
It's good that you mentioned that. I was about to spoil it.
Oh, there you see. I was joking. We don't have callers, people. Don't try to call in. But yes, I had a feeling that Dan would want to jump in and say, hey, did you? There's so much to choose from, everybody. And all you have to do is download the WynnBET app or visit WynnBET.com to get started. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where a play through WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. No, the in-laws had on the Blue Jay game, and then they had on hockey. Oh, hockey. Imagine that in Canada.
Was it the Bruins game?
No, it wasn't. No one watched Bruins. Actually,
the Bruins look good.
Bruins. Do you want to look good too, Dan? Like the Bruins? Then listen to this ad for Manscaped. Fellas, have you started spring cleaning yet? The carpets need cleaning, the drapes need dusting, and your lawn needs mowing. Spring is sprung and the global leaders in below the waist grooming have the best tools for cleaning aisle five in your pants. Did you know you had aisles in your pants, Dan?
I did not.
You have at least five, apparently, unless it starts at five, because they say aisle five. Time to clear out your winter bush and join the other 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code SGP. Manscaped has the full package you need for spring cleaning this year. The Performance Package 4.0 is the only tool you need to keep your boys looking and smelling like the fresh tulips your partner wants. Start off your spring cleaning and use the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer to get the most precise shave on your hedges. Did we mention it's waterproof as well? No need to worry about watering your grass with this tool. Equipped with an LED light, so you know it'll be a major asset to the new shower routine. Clear your holes and smell the spring air with the Weed Whacker. This nose and ear hair trimmer provide proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. After cleaning your nose, make sure to get rid of that foul ball smell with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. I really hope my mom's listening this week, Dan. For Mother's Day episode, I hope she's listening to the ad read. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. The Crop Reviver, spray on toner for your balls. Keep your boys from sticking to your legs and leave you them smelling fresh like, no, smelling like fresh flowers. Yeah. I don't think I've ever smelled like fresh flowers. Have you ever smelled like fresh flowers, Dan?
You know, I'm really flexible, but I'm not positive that I've ever been able to smell them.
We better get going onto the Manscaped then. Finish off your grooming routine with the Plow 2.0, the perfect razor for the finest shave on your face. I do need that, because if you're using your Lawnmower 4.0 on your balls and your face, you're doing it wrong, boys. Start of spring also marks the start of testicular, what a tough word, Cancer Awareness Month in April. April, this is, what month is this, Dan? May. But you should still check yourself anyhow. Manscaped has partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to bring awareness to why can't I say testicular cancer? I guess because it's a funny word, Dan. Men's health and early cancer detection. Manscaped is committed to raising awareness for the most common form of cancer in men aged 15 to 35 and giving support to fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular. There we go. Cancer is part of our We Save Balls initiative. So, smell oh so fresh and oh so clean this spring. Here's your call to action, ladies and gentlemen. Get 20%. I guess it's just to gentlemen. But ladies, you're going to want your gentlemen to get it. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code SGP, of course, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code SGP at manscaped.com. It's time to throw out your old hygiene habits and upgrade your life. Whew. I need a drink. All right. That's should we get right to the main course or should we start with PFL first, Dan? What do you say?
Let's throw PFL at the end. The people want to hear more about
PFL,
UFC.
You're second rate.
Although before we get to PFL being all second rate and throwing it at the end, my picks did win. So just we'll have that. We don't want to bury that. My picks won on PFL. Hope you tagged along. And now let's talk about UFC.
He is positive. We'll get to PFL, but Dan is up a huge amount of money in a couple weeks of PFL. All right, UFC, where to start? What a strange event for numerous reasons. First of all, we lost Cowboy Cerrone, Joe Lozon. Last minute, Cerrone got food poisoning, is what the story is. So that saved Dan an L, and it stole a W for me, which would have put me ahead of Dan this week. So hopefully it'll happen again soon, and then I can beat Dan there. And then did you hear some people miss weight also? Norma Dumont, she missed weight, even though she was saying she doesn't know why the UFC is keeping the women's featherweight division around. And then she went and came in at 146 and a half pounds. Yeah, and then she misses. I guess she wants him to move it to lightweight, maybe. She missed weight. The champion guy, Charles Oliveira, missed weight as well by half a pound. Lost his title on the scale, which is the first time that's happened in the UFC. We've seen it happen in other second-rate promotions, but it happened in the UFC. There's a whole scale gate, like there always is. He's blaming the scale in the back being different than the scale, the official scale. But basically, I think you can boil it right down to it's his job. He's paid to weigh 155 pounds on the official scale at weigh-ins, not whatever other scale they're using. And so, and everybody else made weight for the event except one other person. So we're talking 30 fighters or 28 other fighters, excuse me, may wait. And all three other fighters in the title fights were yet to be right on weight. They all may wait as well. So you can complain all you want about scale being screwy in the back, but that's my take on it. At least you have a different take, Dan.
I mean, I think, so I'll say a couple of things about all of this is like, first of all, you know, you're right. He needs to make weight regardless. And, you know, he came in, what was it, half a pound or a full pound over for his first weigh in. Then he went back and took another hour and nothing came off. So yeah. I think while we can blame, you know, like if you want to blame the scale being in a different weight than the one out front, he still has an hour to drop that weight and nothing came off in an hour. So the fact that nothing came off in an hour tells me he was at the peak of what he was going to be able to do with his current body composition, right? Like he there was nothing left for him to sweat out. So whether or not that scale in the back was wrong or not and who it belonged to and all the stuff that people want to talk conspiracy theory about right now, it doesn't fucking really matter because like given an extra hour, he could not shed half a pound. So like that scale could have been 20 pounds off and it really wouldn't have mattered. Right. So that's my first take on it. My second take on it is like, I think we're making this a huge deal when it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, like I think this would have wound up being a much bigger deal if he came in as the challenger, you know, like Travis Luter style where, you know, like he came in, didn't make weight, couldn't fight for the championship. The fight winds up being a non-title fight. Because in that case, you could have like a dominant win and you still wouldn't be the champion and the other guy still would be, which is real weird. Whereas in this case, like he's the champ. Like I know he doesn't have the belt, but he's the champ. He's fighting. We know because of the way he won and how he won, he's the best lightweight in the world. We know he's going to be fighting for the title next. We're booking him as if he's the champion. Dana said he still got his pay-per-view points. So like, the title's not around his waist, but apart from that, like fucking nothing changed. So like, I almost think we're making too big of a deal out of it.
Yeah. It's the only person who should really care is Charles Oliveira. Cause it's, you know, he's technically not the champ and he lost a buttload of money. I'm assuming he was fined the 30% that, Norma Dumont was fined. You can get all the money stuff on my MMA site, moneymma.substat.com, but it probably cost him about 150 grand in fines, 120 grand in fines. Plus, he may not have got his championship pay for the sponsorship money. He instead of like 42 grand, he may have only gotten 21 grand. I'm not positive on that. And then next fight, who knows if he's going to get pay-per-view points because he's not the champ and he's not going to get the championship sponsorship money. And, you know, it's going to cost him a lot of money. But yeah, basically the title is just basically a prop to signify this person's the best fighter in this here weight class, and he's obviously after his performance last night, he showed that he is easily the best fighter at lightweight, or at least he's found no equal in the cage as of late. Maybe someone out there who could beat him, but at this point he is head and shoulders above anyone who he has fought. So like I said, who cares if the belt's around his waist or not?
Yeah, and let's get to talking about the actual performance, because that's really the most interesting
thing.
It was
a surprise. I was saying, I bet he's going to get knocked out now, because plus, going back to the weigh-in quickly, he was like, he waited to the very last second to weigh in, too. So obviously, he can claim all he wants that he was already on weight, but he
was worried. It wasn't coming off.
He was worried because he took as much time as possible. He was well behind everyone else before he actually stepped in the scale. So anyhow, I expected him to be depleted and Gaethje to take advantage of that and knock him out. Looked like it maybe was going to come true, but that's basically how Oliveira fights go now. He's turning into a Fedor guy where he gets himself in trouble and then grabs victory from the jaws of defeat.
Yeah, and I'll say this. There's so many interesting facets about this fight. The one that is the most interesting to me, perhaps, is like, he outstruck Justin Gaethje, right? Like, it goes down as a submission.
He knocked him down. Did he not?
It's
wild.
If he went in and tried to finish with strikes there, I think he would have.
Yeah.
Like, I think he would have finished notoriously durable Justin Gaethje with strikes. And granted, he took the much smarter, easier route, which was jumping on the back and looking for the sub. transitioning, doing all the things he's supposed to, and he got the sub. He did the smart thing there. But if he wanted to, I think he could have TKO'd him, which is crazy to say. I'll also say this. I can't remember where I saw it, but somebody pointed out that Charles Oliveira is got a really distinct advantage in the MMA world right now, especially when he's fighting high-caliber strikers like Dustin Poirier or Justin Gaethje, in that if they tag him, he effectively has, like, the boxing standing 10 count to come back because they don't want to engage with him on the mat. Like, right. If he has his wits about him enough to, like, stick his legs up and play, like, fun butterfly guards, they just get the fuck out of Dodge. He gets 10 seconds to get his heads about him, and then he comes back and hits you. It's, like, a very, very interesting, like, advantage he has naturally built in. And granted, I don't think he'd have that against Beneil Dariush or Islam Makhachev, who I think both would be more willing to engage with him in a grappling match. But I also think those guys wouldn't tag him in the first place. So, like, it's an interesting advantage he has over, like, very talented strikers.
Yep, very, very good point. So, anyhow, while I was watching the fight, I was thinking Gaethje was going to win. I'm thinking, well, Gaethje's so one-dimensional. This is, it's wild that he's going to end up being the champion. But it was all for naught. And he, once again, fish out of water. All these years, we heard about how he was this amazing collegiate wrestler. And, you know, if it ever got to the grappling, he can handle himself. And it has not come true in the least, because he's looked at past the two fights, albeit it was against Charles Oliveira and Habib. Anyhow, he did not look good in the least. He looks like an amateur, basically, down there.
Yeah, well, and it's worth mentioning, and I feel like more people have to say this, is like, he was a D1 All-American college wrestler. That's like a sentence we have to say. But I'll also say this, is that when you don't actively work on applying those skills to MMA, which is it's not as simple as just saying, turn the wrestling on. It's, you know, actively integrating a strike turned into grappling or a defensive takedown. Like, there's so many different ways to use takedowns, and it doesn't work the same as wrestling, where both people know the takedown is attempting or attempt is coming, or, you know, like, both people have the same goal in mind. There's lots of different goals in MMA. I think the fact that he's just never used it, we write D1 wrestler in his little column when we break him down, but at the same time, like, I don't know that any of the stuff that goes along with that is there with him anymore. And maybe that's just us hyping up past credentials more than they're worth. But man, dude, he does look, and this time, I guess he was hit at least, but he does look like a fish out of water against high level grapplers.
And it's the speed that these people get him into a bad position is the thing that's so shocking. Like, the MMA fighter with the most rudimentary wrestling and grappling seem to be able to defend themselves on the ground. And he doesn't seem to have any of that in him.
Yeah. And in the Habib one, you know, I pointed out that, like, Habib shot a takedown, would have wound up in guard, but then he, like, just sliced through Gaethje's guard kind of pathetically. And yeah. I wrote Gaethje off of that. I'm more willing to give Gaethje a little leeway in this, because I think he was really effed up from the striking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just said, I thought Charles Oliveira, if he decided to pour on strikes, would have gotten a TKO. So, like, it's hard for me to then be like, oh, his grappling looked so bad. It did look so bad, but I think in this case, I'm willing to give him a little bit more leeway than in the Habib fight.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm banging on about Gaethje, because it's basically, it was more of a, the story is Charles Oliveira, not Gaethje, and whether he can grapple or not. It's how good Oliveira is looking.
Yeah, and I'll say this too, you know, from somebody who has a vote in such things, from a pound for pound perspective, which, first of all, is kind of a dumb argument anyway, how many people would you put ahead of him right now in the pound for pound rankings?
I would put out, I would put Volkanovski probably and Usman. That might maybe it, just off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think Volkanovski, Usman, depending on your feelings about John Jones and where he is and stuff like
it's
that.
Hard
like
to see. He hasn't fought in so long. It's hard to say.
Yeah. Have you seen pictures of him, though?
He's jacked.
Yeah,
he looks like me.
He looks fucking huge.
He's not coming back to 205, guys.
No. That's definitely not happening. But, yeah, like, you pretty much hit it spot on. It's like Volkanovski and Usman at, like, 1A and 1B. And, like, maybe Oliveira has, like, inserted himself, like, even just, like, ahead of Israel Adesanya and, like, those type of guys. Like, man, he's looking like a different animal in there.
So, obviously, we like to move on to what's next. We're always looking down the road. What's next? Sean Sheehan, Sphere MMA, says he hopes everyone is looking forward to Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler for the lightweight title in the fall.
Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler.
It's a joke. It's sarcasm. But obviously, you can see that happen, though. If Conor McGregor decides he wants to fight for the title, then he will fight for the title. Speaking of Jack Geitzel, I don't know if he's going to make lightweight anymore. So reason to bring him up is we have to decide what's next for Oliveira. It sounds like he is going to be given a chance to get back his title. Who do you want to see him fight?
I'd want to see him. I think the smart fight for him is to fight Islam Makhachev. Like, I think as far as most deserving right now, if you look at the rankings, like I think Islam Makhachev is probably it, but Dana,
I don't think it's going to happen though.
Dana really hated his last performance. Was it the Bobby Green fight?
Dariush, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, the Bobby Green fight. So, well, we could say this, like Dariush and Makhachev could fight, you know, in June or July or August, even turn around and fight Oliveira in September, October. If Oliveira wants to come back quicker than that, I mean, like, man, what is even left in the UFC's lightweight division? Because, like, I'm not going to say he's cleaned it out, but, like, man, he beat some of the dudes at the top of this division that make it, like, really hard to say anybody. You know, he beat Gaethje, who's number one. He beat Poirier, who's number two. We're saying three should fight four. He beat number five, Michael Chandler. I mean, the winner of Rafael Dos Anjos in Rafael Fiziev, if it's impressive. But I'll say this, like, you know, not for anything. Like, if Conor were to come back, that's the perfect fight for him to, like, just make a huge-ass payday and set up the Makhachev fight.
He would destroy him so bad.
I think he'd kill him. No, I think he would embarrass him in a very bad way. But if you're Dana White at this point, like, and you're thinking to yourself, like, okay, Charles Oliveira seems to be pretty marketable. He also seems to be pretty fucking good. And he seems to be a company man for the most part. He's never talking bad about the UFC. He fought through probably some of the most god-awful contracts you've ever seen, being that he was, what was he, like 10-7 at a point in the UFC? Like,
yeah,
he probably has just been a company man and happy to do what the company needs him to all this time. I mean, fuck, he had like a 9-fight winning streak before he got a title shot, and he never once complained about it. So, if Dana wants to turn him into a superstar, roll Conor into town and let freaking Charles Oliveira beat the living piss out of him. And then maybe people will be talking about Charles Oliveira, Islam Makhachev as being like a big deal.
And a good way to get Conor McGregor under control too for the company, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, here's the thing. Conor McGregor is never going to be what we want him to be, which is like an active fighter who fights where he, like, right now he's ranked number 9 in the UFC.
He shouldn't even be ranked anymore. It's crazy.
I mean, yeah, I guess it depends on how you feel about inactivity. But let's say he's number 9. Like, he should be fighting somebody like Gregor Gillespie or Matruz Gamrot right now, who I'll also say I'd pick either of those guys to beat freaking Conor McGregor at this point, right? Like, both of those guys are just out wrestling. So, like, those are the types of guys he should fight. At the same time, like, we know he's never going to be what we want. So, like, we also have to just be like, what can we get out of Conor McGregor that could make us happy at this point? And, like, a fight with Charles Oliveira to, like, give us more time to find a real contender is maybe something he could do for us.
It's true. It's true. And always, everything always comes back to Conor, doesn't it? All right. Have we said enough about the main event? You want to move on to the gripping co-main event The title fight, Dan?
I will tell you very emphatically, I never want to go on to the co-main event.
Well, we have a new champ, Dan. We got Oliveira minus 170, so happy times there. The next fight I whiffed on. It was the only one I got wrong on the main card. I had Rose Namajunas beating Carla Esparza. It didn't happen. Esparza got split decision, 47-48, 49-46, 48-47. Is there anything, what can we say about this, Dan?
I mean, there's so much we actually could say about this.
Is it Rose's fault?
I will say this. So, you know, Rose got shit on a lot, and rightfully so, both for the way she fought and the way she handled herself afterwards, where she was like indignant in backstage. She was like, I won that fucking fight. I don't know if you caught her Instagram this morning.
Yeah,
there was basically a post like, I think she went and watched the fight and she was like, what the fuck is that? Because like we all did when we watched
it, there was her corner liked it. She was doing exactly what they wanted her to do.
I mean, like, yeah, I don't know what to say about that either. I will just say this. There were six punches landed in the first round, three by each. I'll also say this, like if those scar cards came out for Rose Namajunas, like, we wouldn't have batted an eyelash, right? Like, I'd have just been like, sure. Because in my book, Rose won three. It's one of the only rounds I could say, like, somebody definitely won. Rose won three. Carla won four. Rose won five. I know those things are true. Those are correct scores. Those are rounds that were easy to score. You know, Rose jacked her up a little bit in the third round. Carla wrestled her up a little bit in the fourth. Rose definitely got the better of her in the fifth. I had those scores across the board. I think those were easy to score. One and two were anybody's guess. Like you can.
Yeah, nothing happens. So anyway.
Like in one, I actually thought like we might just say striking and grappling's even. So then we go to the next criteria, which is aggression and octagon control. Give it to Carla. And I think that might be how they scored the first two rounds. Most of the judges gave one and two to Carla. If that's the case, it's due to the fact that she may be striking and grappling. There's no discernible difference about what they did. Give it to her based on aggression and octagon control. So, yeah, like, I know Rose will probably win two rounds, but apart from that, everything else was a coin flip. So, not important to, like, really break down this fucking fight because it was just Rose Namajunas doing... just fighting a fucking stupid fight. All right, last word on
this.
Don't even know how to wrap my head around this. But
did it happen? That's the question I want to know. I don't know if you're headed that way or not, but why did that happen?
That's exactly where I was going.
It's perfect. Good.
Yeah. So here's why I think it happened. Let's think about every single rematch Rose Namajunas has ever had in her entire life. So she loses to Jessica Andrade.
Yeah.
She fights her again. In the rematch, she doesn't rush in, grab a weird, you know, some weird grips in the clinch and get dropped on her head. Instead, she's very safe from the outside. She picks her apart. She wins a very narrow decision. She beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk by brutal knockout. What does she do in the next fight? She barely mixes it up with her in close range. She tries to stay further away. She understands how tough the first finish was. She wins a close decision. What does she do against Weili Zhang after kicking her head off? She pokes and prods her from further away. So in all three of those rematches, her response to having a dominant victory, or in one case, a dominant defeat, was to fight smarter. I now know what this person's strikes look like. I move further away. I play safer. I win the decision. I think she thought she was doing that here. It just went to an extreme level to the point where it cost her a fight.
Yeah, she's a hard one. I know she has struggles outside of the cage, but inside the cage, this is not demeaning any of her outside the cage struggles. But inside the cage, she fights like a head case a lot of times.
Yeah, it's just, and I get why you would be safer the second time, right? Like, because you know so much more. But this is one of those rematches that wasn't a fucking rematch. You know what I mean by that? Like, Rose Namajunas, Carla Esparza 2 was not really a rematch. This is a different Rose Namajunas. This is a different Carla Esparza. They're not the same fighter. It's not like fighting Joanna Jędrzejczyk in back-to-back fights or Weili Zhang in back-to-back fights. It's different. They're what was it, 8 years removed or whatever. And in addition to that, like, Rose doesn't look anything like that Rose anymore. So to fight a smarter and safer and think you know something about your opponent fight just doesn't make any sense.
And it sucks that she had enablers in her corner also, which usually Trevor Whitman, you do not hear any negative comments about him. And he was part of that.
Yeah. I'm having trouble even trying to figure out where that comes into, because also, like, he's so often he's like the loud dominant voice in people's corner. Yeah. He was not that. Like, Pat Barry's voice came through first.
Oh, okay. And think he wasn't really on board.
I don't know if he was or he wasn't. It's so hard to tell, but like, I'm also not ready to just lay blame on him. Yeah. You know, I feel like the post fight or the post fight speech sounded like it was influenced by Pat Barry, especially because I know based on people who I've worked on websites with who happened to be in press row and backstage for that one, said Pat Barry was like grilling media members about what they had for scorecards in that fight and what rounds they thought Carla Esparza won, which, you know, like leads to Rose's indignance. And then like, The post in the morning sounds like it was Trevor Whitman inspired. You know what I mean? Like he has that like thoughtful look back and like, oh shit, that didn't go the way I wanted it to. And that's what the morning post sounded like. So it's hard for me to just blame Trevor Whitman, but man, whatever that was, that 25 minutes of my life, it was not fun. That's the only time I've been with a live crowd who is booing. I like wanted to fucking boo from my couch.
No kidding. Yeah. Are we going to ever bet on Rose Namajunas again? It's going to be hard, right?
I don't think so. Like, don't get me wrong. If it's a close fight, like if you put her in there with Andrade for a third fight, I'm going to pause before I pick her. And then I'll probably pick her. You know, I'll be honest. I'll probably pick her. I think she's the most talented strawweight on the planet. I do. Even after all this, I think she's the most talented strawweight on the planet. But like, it's just so hard to understand what happens.
Yep. And you don't know what you're going to get with her, unfortunately. So anyhow, kudos to Carla Esparza. She got the belt back. This is the thing that doesn't happen very often, especially the amount of time that she has been not been champ. This is a very rare feat, and she'll still look good for a wedding because she didn't get hit ever, right?
That's that. She definitely did not. Now, I'm gonna turn this on you.
Okay.
Give me a percent chance that they make Carla Esparza Rose Namajunas 3.
Oh, God. Yeah, 0.0, perhaps? To steal a line from Animal House, yeah. But the one good thing is, with the fight that was going to be hard to score and controversial, we had two of the best voices, to help us understand that on the telecast, and Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier. They always know scoring, all the judging qualifications and rules. And they're always, they would never say something like, well, you have to beat the champion, to get the belt. They would never say something like that. So that's good.
Yeah. But I think they were on board with like not having to beat the champion in this one. And I'll also say this. I very rarely say this. I very rarely give kudos to Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan shitting on Carla Esparza in the cage for the fight after the fight was so funny. He was like, I don't know if you caught it, because I know sometimes you fast forward through that.
No,
chain.
I didn't bother, but I heard about it.
Dude, it's so good. Go back and listen to it. I think his first question is like, so how did you feel when it went to the scorecards? Because neither of you did anything in this fight at all.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Dana White, I guess Dana White's more mellow than he was back in the day, like when he stormed out of the Damian Maia Anderson Silva fight. But old Dana would have had a fit over this. He seemed to be kind of more chilled about it.
Damian Maia versus Anderson Silva in Abu Dhabi, UFC 112, for those of you who are going back to it. infinitely better.
Don't go back
to
it, please.
Infinitely better than this fight.
Oh yeah, because yeah, there was a fight at the starting. It wasn't five rounds of that. So yes, obviously. And yeah, well, we probably wasted too much time talking about it. So that was a crap fight. Main event good. Co-main event crappy. Oh, main event, Charles Oliveira won via submission, rear naked choke, 3:22 in the first round. We didn't really say that. We just talked about how good you looked. Next fight, we pretty much hit it right on. Other than the front kick, we had a feeling it was going to be a knockout. Michael Chandler knockout, an all-time classic front kick to Tony Ferguson, 17 seconds into the second round. We had that minus 400 for Chandler. We're going to hear how Ferguson looked so great in the first round, and he looked better than he has in a long time, but then this happened. So I don't need to see Tony Ferguson anymore. It's four straight losses for him, two of them via knockout. That's enough's enough.
So I'll say this. First of all, I said before this fight started, I thought we were writing Tony Ferguson off prematurely. Like losses to Michael Chandler, losses to, I mean, hang on, let me get the list in order. Michael Chandler, Beneil Dariush, Charles Oliveira, and Justin Gaethje, two of which were by decision where he didn't take much damage, right? The Dariush and Charles Oliveira. I mean, I guess he took damage to his arm in the Oliveira one, but like not punches to the head with Dariush and Oliveira. Like, those four guys are probably four of the top five fighters in the lightweight division, just minus Dustin Poirier, right? So like, is he spent? No, but just for fuck's sake, stop giving him top five opponents at this point. He's 38. Let him fight, you know, Drew Dober, right? Like, let him fight Drew Dober. And like, I don't want to fire him, and I don't want to say he's done, because like you said, he's lost two of those by knockout, but two of them he didn't take much damage. Let him fight somebody like Drew Dober or Terrence McKinney or fucking somebody like that. And then we'll talk about whether or not he's spent. If he goes and gets beat by Drew Dober, then yes, I agree. Let him go to PFL or Bellator or wherever he's going to go, or let him retire and kick steel poles in his free time. But like at this point in time, like it's so hard to like, I mean, like look at the UFC's rankings in any division and just be like, okay, well, what would happen if somebody lost to Aljamain Sterling, Piotr Jan, TJ Dillashaw, and Corey Sandhagen? Would you then say that they're like pathetic and don't belong in the UFC? No, you wouldn't say that. And like, Rob Font's lost to most of those guys, right? Like,
fire him.
And we're still not, you love firing people though. I'll say this though, while I'm still going to bat for Tony Ferguson and saying like, by the way, he won round one on every single judge's scorecards. He dropped Michael Chandler. I'm not saying he's done yet. He's clearly depleted. And also, he's clearly pissing off the UFC with what he's saying. It wouldn't surprise me if this is the last time we saw him in the UFC.
I think Dan's just saying all this so we can continue to fade him and make money on Tony Ferguson going forward. So
I thought about betting him in this one. I'm not going to lie. I thought about betting him in this one.
All right. But you didn't. Luckily. So that was a good fight. Then we had another dud. Ovince St. Preux beat Shogun Hua. Split decision. 28-29, 29-28, 30-27. He won with front kicks, basically. That's the story of the whole fight. Shogun didn't do much.
Yeah, teeps to the body were enough to win this fight. I think they were the most impactful strikes, too.
Yeah.
You know, I think the judges' scorecards on the 29-28 made sense. It's really weird to me to see that one judge didn't give Shogun the second. Because to me, he like undoubtedly won the second round. So the 30-27 is weird. And also the 29-28 for Shogun is weird. So like there's multiple bad scorecards in there. But we
had some wacky cards last night, and one judge was on the wrong side of three split decisions, which should be a red flag to his boss.
Is it Camijo?
It is, yes.
Yeah, and I think he's had some shitty ones in the past too. Did he score the fight for Norma Dumont last night?
Yes.
Oh, yes, that's really
I know. I thank him for that, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a really bad one. But yeah, no, I think Vince St. Preux won. The teep seemed to be the most, you know, important strike. Felt bad for Shogun at the end of it. Hopefully he gets that one last retirement fight he wants.
Well, if that judge does end up out of work, he can always go work at Sherdog, right, Dan?
Yeah, he's no, Sherdog guys had this fight right, by the way.
Oh, well, there you go. See? All right, not much to talk about last fight. Next one, I got right. Haha, Dan got wrong. I got plus money too. Plus 100 on Randy Brown. Split decision over Chaos Williams, 29-28. Used what all MMA fighters should use. Only a few of them have clued in that a jab can win you a fight. And that definitely, especially when you have a reach advantage. And that's what Randy Brown rode to a victory over the very dangerous Chaos Williams.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. This fight, when it went to decision, I actually wasn't sure who was going to take it because it was clear in my mind, Chaos won round one. It's clear in my mind that Randy Brown won round two. In round three, Chaos Williams knocked him down with that right hand. And it was mean. It was like a big, hard right hand. He got on top. He landed a little ground and pound. After that, Randy Brown definitely landed more and more consistent strikes. Whether or not they all built up and were more impactful than Chaos Williams, I don't know ultimately whether or not I judged one more than the other. But like, really, I think this is one of those instances where regardless of who you had, you wouldn't have been able to complain at the end of it.
I would have complained, but I won, so I will not complain.
You would have complained if that no, big right hand was more no, worthy was than the... Yeah, I think round three was razor close and the other two were split.
I thought Randy Brown won, but I wouldn't complain. Well, I would complain because I'd be mad that I lost. But yes, either guy could have won that fight. So I went 4-1 main card. Dan went 3-2. But dark skies are ahead for me. Before we get into that, Athletic Greens, let's get into that. We're brought to you by Athletic Greens and their AG1 supplement. So what is this stuff? With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. Special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. All of those things. It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. AG1 supports better sleep quality and recovery, and Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/SGP. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/SGP to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. All right, let's zip through the rest here. Francisco Trinaldo is not dead yet, Dan.
He's so fast.
He looked very good against Danny Roberts, who he had picked, despite his Danny Roberts fancy blonde hair. Unanimous decision, 29-28, 30-27, 30-26. The old man still has a lot of bark left and a lot of bite and bark in the old dog, we'll say.
Nothing more to say for me other than all of what I thought was true about this fight was true. Roberts had the reach advantage. He would fight smarter on the outside. What I did not take into account is that somehow 43-year-old Francisco Trinaldo is fast enough to leap in to the inside, land his punches, and get out of dodge.
Yep.
Did you hear on the broadcast he's the second oldest guy in the UFC, only behind Alexei Oleinik, and he fucking moves like that. It's infuriating.
Yep. And he's a welterweight. He really should be a lightweight. So yeah. Pretty wild. Those guys usually age out much quicker, much earlier than this. So we whiffed on that. That was a pick'em fight. Next one I whiffed on, unfortunately, Norma Dumont -225, lost to Macy Chasson +185. That's a big underdog Dan hit there. If I'd known Dumont would come in overweight, I probably would have changed my pick just because the stats are so skewed against people that come in that miss weight. But nonetheless, I have to stick by my pick. I lost. Biggest win of Chasson's career, perhaps, just because it shows that she's still legit.
Man, I've kind of always thought she's legit. Like, the couple losses she's had are not terrible losses, right? Like, she's 8-2 in her career. She only has losses to Lena Landsberg and Raquel Pennington. The Landsberg fight was definitely like, I got to be careful and realize that I'm not particularly good at wrestling. And then she fixed that for a couple of subsequent fights and had a little bit of trouble with Raquel Pennington, who's still like a top 5-7 bantamweight. But like, man, she took it to Dumont here. The split decision is insane, dude. Like, it's, I don't know how in the world Camijo had two of those rounds for Norma Dumont. Literally every single media guy scored it exactly the same, which is also funny because like 30-27 was also not the right scorecard.
No, nope.
Like Norma Dumont won the third round pretty handedly, in my opinion. It was Chaisson won one and two, and Dumont won three. And so, like, and literally every media member agreed with that, and none of the judges got that. So, weird scorecards yet again. But I'd say Macy Chaisson looks like somebody who, I mean, still only 10 pro fights under her belt. And, you know, not terribly old. I mean, I guess we don't know what the aging curve for a bantamweight looks like, but she's only 30. So, like, who fucking knows what she could progress to?
Yep, it's true. If it's like the men's heaviest weight classes, then she's got a whole decade left at least. So kudos to Dan. He hit a big underdog there, which helped save your night a little bit. Flyweights, Brandon Royval, he saved us. Looked like he was going to lose this fight against Matt Schnell. Then out of nowhere, he snatches a guillotine choke 2-14 into the first round in a fight that he was clearly losing.
Did you ever think you would see a fight that lasted less than half a round and would win fight of the night?
Yeah, wild, right?
That, I mean, like, and it was. It easily was fight of the night. This is Royval doing Royval stuff, though, right? Like, he's so game when he's on his back. All the time he's game when he's on his back. It's a shame he doesn't like to grapple more. Like, he keeps winning by submission, but, like, he hates grappling. He, like, only cares about striking, and then he gets a submission when he tags somebody or they panic grapple. And in this case, they weren't even panic grappling. They were just trying to scramble to their feet, and he snatched that neck. Actually, if you listen to the Top Turtle MMA podcast, he said he was going to scramble with him and snatch a neck, and he did exactly that.
Oh, spoiler alert on Top Turtle. And then I whiffed on the next one. Dan got this one right. Blagoy Ivanov, unanimous decision, 29-28, 29-28 over Marcos Rogerio de Lima.
Yeah, I saw a lot of hate on this, but I think that people were maybe overrating how hard de Lima was hitting in the late rounds, because I think he was spent. It didn't look like he had anything on his punches from the beginning of the second round on. So, yeah, I scored it for Ivanov in, again, not to toot my own horn, go back and listen to the breakdown. I told you, Blagoy Ivanov does fucking not get knocked out ever. Nope. And he tires you out because he's got surprisingly good cardio for a fat guy who's been stabbed in the heart.
Very, very, very well put. So Dan hit that. We hit Royval minus 260. Dan hit Ivanov minus 150. We both hit the main event, so to speak, of the early prelims. Andre Fialo knocked out Cameron Van Camp with the, I think they were just saying how, one of the announcers was saying how Van Camp had to be careful, and he got himself knocked out 235 into the fight.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's exactly, you know, let's keep tooting my horn since I hit a bunch in a row. Yep. Here. Fialho hit so fucking hard, and I said, Van Camp, he slugs. He throws bombs once in a while, but, like, mostly he wants to grapple with you. Fialho was a guy he was never going to be able to grapple with, and he just tempted fate too many times, throwing big loopy shots. Like, he'd hit him with a good technical shot and then get excited and just throw like a bunch of wild shit. And that's why he got caught. So, yeah, I'm Fialho looked like I expected him to look. He also bagged himself a KO of the night or a performance of the night bonus along with Chandler. So good on him. Good win for him. And I heard he's already got a fight booked.
Yes, apparently. They haven't said who, right?
There's some rumors out there, but nothing solidified yet. No.
Okay. Dan does not want to give out the rumors. So we got the next one wrong. This one hurts. I like Melissa Gatto. I still think she's good and she's going to be good, but she lost to Tracy Cortez. Cortez apparently is a much stronger grappler, wrestler, physically stronger and better than we gave her credit for. She won a unanimous decision 29-28 across the boards.
Do you think it's that she's physically stronger than we gave her credit for? Or counterpoint, do you think it's Melissa Gatto was too complacent to be on her back and look for subs?
Yeah, could be.
Because I think if Gatto just decided, I'm not going to be here on my back and I'm going to get back up, she was winning the striking, right? Like, I thought she was a better striker than Tracy Cortez. And if she just gets back up, she maybe gets on top of a couple of those takedown attempts instead of just being on her back. I think it cost her the fight just being complacent and happy to grapple. So a little bit disappointing on my part for her, but at the same time, like, Yeah, Tracy Cortez did what she needed to in there. I'm not like more sold on Tracy Cortez after that fight, though. Are you?
You're still not willing to give Jong's girlfriend any credit. Hey, I see Jong did bet her, so he was happy that he put money on his girlfriend.
Quick question. Out of the UFC's top 15 women in the flyweight division, would you pick Tracy Cortez to beat any of them?
Probably. I don't know who's in it, but no.
All right. I'll give you the last five in the flyweight rankings. Cynthia Calvillo, Jessica I, Casey O'Neill, Macy Barber, Erin Blanchfield.
Well, she beat me, Casey O'Neill, because she's hurt. So she beat her right now. Calvillo basically is the only one that I went about. The other ones, no.
For sure. Yeah. So that's sort of maybe my Calvillo. Point. It's like she's 4-0 and maybe could fight an outsized Cynthia Calvillo who really belongs down in strawweight. But apart from that, like, she's not beating any of these up and comers. She's not beating an Andrea Lee or a Casey O'Neill or a Jessica I or an Erin Blanchfield. Like, I just nothing about her performance made me feel like she would.
Sorry, Jong, I tried, but Dan is not being generous at all.
Not sold.
So we lost that one. We lost the next one too. CJ Vergara looked very, very good against Clayton Rodriguez. Split decision again, 29-28, 28-29, 29-28.
Call me crazy. I definitely agreed with Camijo in this one. Then I thought Rodriguez won this fight.
It was close. I'm fine either way, but yeah.
Yeah, and I get why maybe they gave Vergara the third round, but I definitely gave it to Rodriguez. And most of the media did too, and all the fan scores on MMA decisions did too. You know, I'm not gonna litigate it too much because ultimately it was a fight between two flyweights who I was really unimpressed with at the end of the day. But like, I didn't think I got this one wrong.
Gumby is not impressed with your performance.
Here's a performance I was excited about.
Loopy's quickly become one of my favorites. Lupita Gunides, our Canadian sister that we have adopted here in Canada, totally destroyed Ariane Carnelosi. With the grappling, 30-27, 30-26, 30-26.
Yeah, I'll say this. Sometimes Joe Rogan comes into the cage and overhypes a victory.
Yeah.
Sometimes he underhypes one, like Carlos Barzas, which is really nice. Did you, again, I know you don't listen to these very often, but did you happen to catch what he said about Lupita Gunides?
No, I during the fight he and Cormier were going wild over
in the post fight. He suggested that she be in the mix for a top contender, which like no, don't give her like
she's not I even mean, like, a mainstay in strawweight yet.
Yeah,
I mean a couple like, at strawweight first.
Well, I mean, so since her debut, which she lost kind of a weird split decision that I gave her over Jessica Penne, and I didn't think she lost. She is 3-0 at strawweight since then.
Yep.
You know, obviously there's that weird jump up to flyweight, which it seems like she's not going to do again. But wins over Silvana Juarez Gomez by armbar. She beat Loma Lukbume, who's good. And she not just beat Ariane Carnelosi, she fucked up Ariane Carnelosi. Yeah. She made her look like she's never fought MMA before. I'm not sure I'm ready to say she's like in the mix, but like,
no.
Is it crazy to say she probably should get a ranked opponent next?
Yeah, it's not the deepest weight class, so yeah, sure. It's not like Carnelosi is a world beater. She was, 2-1, I think, heading into that fight. So, but it's a way she beat her. Like, someone who should be or appears to be physically stronger than her, she just manhandled her, regardless of...
Let me throw a random ranked name at you. Would you pick Lupi Godinez to be Angela Hill?
Yes.
Yeah, I would too. She's ranked 13.
Yeah. It's her striking too. I forgot to mention her striking also.
Her striking is what she's supposed to be good at, but also apparently she has a Pan Am champion sister in wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. She literally won Pan Am's last night while Lupi was fighting. But also, like, how about this one? Would you pick her to beat Michelle Waterson?
Oh, yes.
And she's top 10. So, like, while originally I thought, like, Joe Rogan might have been being, like, hyperbolic with that, like, I started looking at the rankings and I'm like, would I pick her to beat Naomi Ansaroff?
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, probably. She's seven. Like, maybe she is in the mix. Like,
or maybe we need to look into these rankings more. We need more strawweights, apparently.
I mean, like, I'd give her a chance against Yan Xiaonan. I'd like to see her fight Mackenzie Dern. That's number four. Yeah. Like maybe she does belong up there.
Strap the rocket to her. She sure is fun to watch, regardless of who she fights. Yeah, that was fantastic. I'm sure the grappling nerd in you, Dan, loved that performance.
Oh, yeah. And I will also say this. If there weren't two stunning knockouts like Fialho and Michael Chandler, I'd give her a performance bonus. It was that good of a performance.
This was not one of your boring grappling, lie on the person, or look for submission. She was active the whole time, not just looking for submissions, but pounding Carnelosi on the bottom.
Yeah, she was incredible.
Yep. Maybe the most impressive person on the night, actually, when you think about it. And then the opener, we got wrong again, Dan. Journey Newsom decided he actually is okay at this MMA thing, and he beat Fernie Garcia, who did not look good in his debut. 33-7, 33-7, 29-28. We whiffed on that one.
Yeah, I will say this. You know, I saw a lot of people talking about that Journey Newsom looked better than they thought he did, or he like bounced back, or, you know, like pick whatever fucking verb you want there for what he did. For me, it looked like Fernie Garcia couldn't pull the trigger. It looked like he couldn't move forward. It looked like he was afraid to be first. It looked like he went in there with a game plan to counter an aggressive fighter, was met with a guy who was less aggressive and didn't know how to deal. It looked like an octagon jitters loss.
Yep. No, very, very good point. Plus we're salty for losing that one. So we lost. The dogs were barking. Woof, 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 as one of your other co-hosts would say. Six dogs came through, I think, out of the 14 off quick count. So I hit one of them, and you hit one of them, and that's it. So didn't do too good predicting the dogs last night.
Yeah, no, not at all. Nope.
Maybe it is time. Maybe this is finally we're going to get regressing back to the mean. Because the favorites were doing statistically better than they should have so far this year. So maybe we're going to have a stretch of dogs coming up. Something to keep in mind when we're making picks for fights going forward. So on the night, 7-7 for me, down $353. So I've bled half of my, the past 2 weeks, I've shed half of my winnings for the year. So I'm down to 66% accuracy, picking every fight on every fight card in the UFC. I'm 122-62, but 66%. I'm down to $457 in profit, 2.5% return on investment. It's gravy that I'm still up money at this point, picking every fight and betting the same amount on every fight. But anyhow, it's not nice losing 2 weeks in a row. Dan, bit better, 8-6, only down $102 last night, 58% on the year. Then you're down $1,800 now, Dan. Good job.
And that's not bad. Now get to the recommended place.
Not bad at all. Recommended plays. Let's move on to as Dan said, recommended plays. Dan went 2-2. He lost on Fernie Garcia, lost on Melissa Gatto, hit on Andre Fialho inside the distance, hit on Macy Chason. So 2-2, up 769. So he's, hey, any profit is good profit. On the year, 52% hit rate. You're up $124, 9% of return on investment. I did a little better, 3-1. Michael Chandler, I hit. I lost in Gatto. I hit OSP. I hit Fialho inside the distance. I made almost $12. It's $11.79 on the year. Recommended plays 59%. So I'm far more effective, but I've made $4 less than Dan. I'm only at 8.4% return on investment. But still, you're not going to sneeze at those numbers. We're giving you good return on investment for our bets recommended plays. As for the bonuses, Brandon Royval, Matt Schnell, as Dan said, fight of the night, Michael Chandler, Andre Fialho, performance of the night, and then her fan bonus. Did you see who got the fan bonus?
Dude, I was hoping you were gonna fucking bring this up.
Let's bring
more farce to this already bullshit way of just like washing the fact that the UFC is making way more money off of this than the fighters are. Yep. And let's pretend we're giving fighters money, and then in addition, give that fighter give that money to a fighter who's clearly the most popular and clearly fought the worst on the whole night.
Rose Namajunas got first place in the fan vote for her quote unquote performance last night. She got $30,000 in cryptocurrency. She probably has some conspiracy about crypto though, and is not going to take it. Second place, Michael Chandler. Hey, well, that's fine. 20 grand. Third place, Charles Oliveira. That's fine as well. 10 grand. So I guess he still qualified for that, just not for the UFC's official bonus. But yeah, I was flabbergasted, Dan, when I saw that Rose won. Didn't you say you could vote before the fights even started?
Once the fights start, you can start voting. So like she probably already had locked up first place before the snooze fest.
So anyhow, that's fine. More money to fighters is fine. Maybe not to Rose necessarily, but hey, not my money, so that's fine. So put that to bed. I want to say it wasn't a great event, but there were quite a few great things. Michael Chandler fight, Lupi's performance, Fialo's knockout. There were some highlights, but there were definitely a lot of lowlights. And that's probably what the event's going to be remembered for, unfortunately. So, and other than recommended plays, it wasn't the best night for us. So put that to bed. I'll tell you about our last sponsor. We'll quickly tell you how great Dan did with PFL. IP Vanish. I want my results from last night to vanish. Maybe IP Vanish can help. Did you know that browsing online using incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? That's right. Without added security, you might as well give away all your private data to hackers, advertisers, your ISP, and other prying eyes. That's why I use IP Vanish VPN to make it easy to stay truly private and secure on the internet. IP Vanish helps you safely browse the internet by encrypting 100% of your data. This means that your private details, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be completely shielded from falling into the wrong hands. Even your physical location will be hidden. IP Vanish makes you virtually invisible online. It's that simple. You can use IP Vanish on unlimited devices without sacrificing on speed. Your computers, tablets, phones, even devices like your Fire Stick. When you're streaming media, whether I'm at home or in public, I don't go online anymore without using IP Vanish. IP Vanish is offering an incredible 70% off their yearly plan for our listeners with a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's just like getting 9 months for free. IP Vanish is super easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're instantly protected. You won't even know it's on. Stop sharing with the world everything you stream, everything you search for, and everything you buy. Take your privacy back today with the brand rated 4.6 out of 5 on Trustpilot. Go to ipvanish.com/SGP and use promotional code SGP and claim your 70% savings. That's ipvanish.com/SGP. PFL, I haven't finished watching it, but I know the results. Dan gave up picks for the welterweights. He went 3-1. Won 81-30 on the year, on the 2 weeks we've done PFL. He's 6-3, up 1271. Dan, what are you going to do with that $13 almost?
I mean, travel.
Of course. I was going to say real estate, but yeah, travel works too. The one he whiffed on, Brada Boy, Ray Cooper III, did not look good against Carlos Leal. You didn't see this fight, Dan? I only saw the first round so far.
I saw a little bit of it, but I'll also just mention Ray Cooper missed weight by a lot. So that obviously like affects whether, I probably wouldn't have bet on him having missed weight by 6 pounds. Like that's
he's probably injured more than likely, you would guess.
Yeah. It's a weird one.
Turtle. And he was on Top Turtle last week.
He was on Top Turtle this past week. He didn't mention anything.
He did sound lethargic. He didn't really sound enthused.
Oh yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. He did seem to talk slower than I was ready for.
I was thinking it was laid back Hawaiian thing, but who knows? But yeah, he whiffed on that one, but he hit the rest. Anthony Pettis looked very good. People forget. Actually you didn't pick Pettis. I'm sorry. That was lightweight, but he looked very good regardless. Grabbing a submission win. He had the Red King, Rory McDonald. He also looked very good. Quickly finished off Brett Cooper in the first round. Submission rear naked choke. You had, what else did you have here? Dan, fight fell through. Yes. The Swedish Denzel Washington came through, plus 120. Dan hit that one. So hopefully y'all got on that one as well. And then the other fight was, you had the Jordanian Prince, correct? Gerard, is that his name? Gerard El Salawi,
yes.
Beat Gleison Tibau, split decision. I didn't see that fight.
I mean, it was close. Not much to say. It looked like a Gleison Tibau fight. How about that?
Yeah, I did see a. You talk about how week, the women's lightweight. Fight. Did you see Larissa Pacheco, her fight?
Yeah, she looked pretty good.
Yeah. Her opponent was like, oh, she's closing her eyes every time a punch gets thrown at her. That's probably not a good sign for her experience level or her hopes in this fight.
Yeah, that just pretty much sums it up. You've got Larissa Pacheco, who's like pretty good. You know, like she was in the UFC. She was pretty good. And she's fighting a woman who's like afraid to get hit.
Yeah, she's 7-1 her opponent was, but I'm guessing she hasn't fought at a high level because, yeah, she seemed to be a fish out of water. So anyhow, that's PFL for you. So no PFL. They're going dark on us, Dan. Now that we're in this groove, you're hitting all your picks. They're going dark for about a month. So no PFL. There's that second-rate promotion, Bellator. Maybe we'll make some picks next podcast for the Bellator coming up if we get some odds by Wednesday.
Yeah, if they come at us with the odds on time so I can take a look at them, I am actually really intrigued by this main event. There's probably two fights on the whole card I care about. Logan Storley versus MVP, Michael Venom Page, is an exciting one because Page is like such a talented striker. And for those who don't know the name Logan Storley, he is an incredible wrestler. He wrestled at Minnesota, which is, you know, pretty damn impressive. He was a four-time All-American. And since then, his, like, with the exception of a split decision loss to the champ, Yaroslav Amosov, like, he hasn't lost ever. He's just, like, grind. Like, he beat the shit out of Joaquin Buckley, like, who's now in the UFC and doing well. Yep. He beat up Neiman Gracie. Like, he's a really talented grappler. So to watch him fight a striker, a lot of fun. I'm also excited for Denise Kielholtz versus Conor Watanabe. It's just like a fun flyweight fight with two fighters who are, you know, near the top of that division anyway. And one of them has already fought, Liz Carmouche, but like either of them could be potential challengers for Carmouche in the near future. Now that she is the dominant champion that she is.
Sarcasm.
But like also, you know, Lola Machida, Paul Daly. I like Kate Jackson. I think people forget that she was like kind of fun on The Ultimate Fighter.
Yep. Yes, sirree. So anyhow, that's that. I don't know how we go hour and a half on a recap show, Dan. We were giving these people so much for the money. All right, so we'll be back Wednesday. Hopefully we'll give you some ultra picks. We will definitely give you all the picks for UFC and ESPN, Blachowicz versus Rakic, which is going down next Saturday from the UFC Apex. So we got Jan Blachowicz versus Alexander Rakic, who I pronounced his name correctly that time, not the first time. Ryan Spann versus Jan Kudalaba. Caitlin Chukagian versus Amanda Hibas. That'll be fun. Maybe not a star-studded fight card, but some interesting stuff on here.
Yeah, there's some ones I really love, and there's some head-scratchers in there.
Hill Jandy Doba should be interesting.
Yeah, and so should Vivian Arroyo versus Andrea Lee should be fun.
Right.
I don't think it'll be such a fun fight, but my goodness, do I love watching Davy Grant fight. That Jake Hadley, who was on Contender Series, is making his flyweight debut. That's kind of fun. I actually think the first fight of the night might be one of the more intriguing ones. Andre Petrosky, who's 2-0 in the UFC since coming off The Ultimate Fighter, versus Nick Maximoff, two guys who both wrestle and grapple at a very high level. So that should be fun.
That's true. Yeah. That one will be a good fight. So,
hey, without looking really quickly, cause you do know both of those two guys, what would you imagine the odds are for that fight?
All right. We're talking Petrosky and Maximoff. Petrosky's probably more known. It should, in my head, it should be pretty close to a pick'em, but I'll say, like, pretty close to a pick'em, but I'll say slight lean to Petrosky.
Petrosky is +330.
No, what? Why? What's going on here,
Dan? And Maximoff is -450.
Okay, what are we missing? Are we going to make money off this, Dan? I'm really excited.
There's a fucking reason I asked you why you thought they would line it, because I thought that sounded crazy.
Are we going to make money off this or what?
I would say
people,
I would,
get in on
I
it.
would I would tell people to go get in on it early, but it seems to be getting wider.
Okay.
Maybe like, wait until Wednesday, guys.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to. Yeah. Once I do my research into this, maybe we're missing something, but now I'm very intrigued, Dan.
That's a big dog.
It is. Wow. Like that would be, okay. I can't make my official pick yet, but yeah, that makes Wednesdays a must listen episode now, right?
It always is, but it now, always it is, now it definitely is.
It definitely is. All right. We'll be back Wednesday. Until then, Jeff Fox, writer on Twitter for me. He is Gumby Vreeland on Twitter. The SGPN Slack is always a fun place to be, especially on fight night. It seems like we're picking up more and more people in there chatting the fights. It's not just Jong talking to himself like it has been sometimes. So jump in there. Lots of fun. Everyone in there are good people. And maybe not all their betting advice is the best, but they're well-intentioned people.
And sometimes I'll drop a fun little extra Bellator pick in there, which won our man Jong some money. He hit on Thibaut Gaethje this past weekend.
Yes, that's right. Drendine asked for some picks, I think. Yes, another regular Drendine asked for some picks, and Dan popped in because he's a man of the people, as he says. And made some money. So get in the SGPN Slack, read our stuff at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Read my MMA stuff at moneymma.substack.com. I will have the brand spanking new pick'em contest for next week. Will be posted sometime on Monday. So at the very least, get in on that and win yourself some stuff. I'm going to let you take us home, Dan, because I don't know what my nickname is going to be. So I'm going to let you pick one.
I'm David Gumby Vreeland. He is the Cookie Monster, Jeff Fox. And we will see you on Wednesday.